latest copy of the state plan draft included in the back that were submitted through the website or directly to DD Council staff. The rest of your comments were also forwarded. Because there were so few, you'll notice there were so few, we've opened it up for more comments until the 1st of June. But it needs to be submitted and adopted in the July DD Council meeting, the middle of July, in order to be submitted to the feds by the middle of August. But here's the good news. We have new guidelines that allow for the state plan to be amended more times than it has been in the past. So in the past, we submitted and you could do an amendment anytime during the process. But now there's built-in amendments and there will be public comment at each of those times. And so I'll bring those to your attention when those happen. But 2 years, so we'll submit a work plan for the first 2 years, and then the following subsequent years, 3 and 4, and then for the 5th and final year. So you get a chance to comment every 2 years on this new 5-year plan. So the copy I gave you has comments added in the back. We've done some more additional editing. It's not done yet. And I'm totally open to taking your comments or for you to submit them again, either to the website, to Mary, to me, via email if you like, some more comments about the content. I also wanted to pass out for you the tool that we use to develop what it is we're going to address, because
did those get passed?
I only have 15 copies, so I don't know how far they went. This is just a template for us to develop the 5-year plan, and you'll see that there are things on there that we didn't address. So, for example, we don't have anything about childcare. We don't have anything this time I'll think about transportation. But we can't address all of them. We simply don't have enough manpower and time to address all the topic areas. So we go through a process of determining which ones are highest priority to the council members at the time. And we have a pretty strong council right now that has an emphasis actually in education. So we're going to look at some of that, restraints and seclusion, things like that, but we haven't looked at too much work on before. We meet every other month for a 2-day workshop. So we work on work groups and committees on Thursday, and then Friday morning we have a full council meeting where we adopt all of the business that's done in the work groups and committees prior to. So this is just FYI to help inform you. It's a new process, it's a new plan, it's a new program, database to collect it all and record it all. So that's what that template is, to show you what those options are for us and why it's set up the way it is here. We got a lot of public comments about how it's set up and why it's set up that way and how confusing it is. It comes directly from the federal program template, and that's why it's set up in those 1.1, 1.3, yada, yada, yada. So a couple of things I wanted to ask for your input specifically about. We don't need to talk about it today, but two of the really hot topics for the council members really has to do with leadership and that whole model of community practices, and that's confusing, and what does that mean, and the need for leadership development and more of that local leadership that really includes community development piece. And so I would ask for your input and ideas and suggestions around that piece, that whole leadership development and community development for community asset building. I think that's really going to be crucially important going forward. And I think the other thing that seems to be really, really strongly emphasized, and much of the DD Council's charter is focused on self-advocacy and on empowering and equipping self-advocates. We have a current project that's 4 or 5 different states, the Western states are involved in, coming together and bringing together all of the self-advocates within the states in conversation regularly with the disability rights organizations of the state, with the USEDs, University Centers for Excellence on DD, and the DD Councils. And so there's initiative within, and you'll see it probably within the packet, for the DD Council to bring in as full partners in that triad that's already set up federally, the disability rights, the DCs, and the USEDs, to add the self-advocates organizations in as a full equal partner. So instead of a 3-way partnership, it'll be a 4-way partnership. And we've been sort of leading the
charge on including and developing the framework for that with the four other, three other Western states and Wyoming. And you'll see that we'll spend quite a bit of time in our self-advocacy items, really working on how do we create that support for full partnership and a model for nationally for that to happen. So we're one of a few pilot projects statewide that are working on that, setting that national agenda, which I think is long overdue. So if you have comments about that, that would be awesome too.
Are there going to be opportunities to for communities to try something out with self-advocacy?
Yes.
When?
Once the new state plan goes into effect, okay, so it has to be submitted to the feds on August 15th, and the new state plan will go into effect, I believe it's October 1st is when we start the new state.
Do you want me to send this out to the world?
To get comments? If it's valuable.
No.
My concern about sending out the template is that we might get folks who will say, I really feel strongly about childcare issues, or I feel strongly about transportation issues. And at this point, we don't have time to go back and incorporate brand new whole items and arenas of information in the state plan that's due August 15th. So it has to be approved at the DD Council meeting in the middle of July in order to meet the federal deadline for submission. But remember, you have comment times now in 2 years, about the first 2 years, and year three and four, and then again about the fifth year. And that's new. So we won't have to, they finally recognize we can't predict 5 years out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And so this is their fix for that, and I think it's really going to help. It certainly will help in keeping information flow between communities and DD Council and what's going on a lot more fluid.
How do you pick the communities?
The communities,
yeah,
what are you looking
at? You said there's five communities in this and that.
Oh, the states?
Five states.
There are five states that went together as a coalition and submitted proposals to the federal government for a grant around, and it's called the EPIC grant, and please don't ask me what it stands for, but it really has to do with self-advocacy development and that inclusion of them in that three-way partnership to become a four-way partnership and have equal voice. And what that's going to do is provide also a full-time paid position of a person with developmental disabilities as the leader and executive director of that piece, that self-advocacy piece. They'll be funded equally out of the other three partners. So they'll have to be full members at the table.
So, Mona, grumblings that we need, where before we were able to like continually fund leadership and different things, so they're really wanting it to be a more like pilot project that the DDC is funding now instead of ongoing things that we've continually funded. How much should that influence our comments?
It absolutely should influence your comments, but because it has been part of the conversation ongoing, it was an idea that we had, and it wasn't well received that it would just be pilot projects and then counties would have to pick them up. And so what we've done is identify target audiences, so perhaps marginalized by ethnicity or socioeconomic or geographical area, you know, OMAX area, you know, something like that. And we've identified a number of items that will identify them as marginalized populations or areas where there's a higher need. And they'll take higher priority for basic leadership development, but projects like yours here, where we have leadership that the county's been supporting, but you've branched out now and have a Hispanic program that has a lot, is full and overflowing for the next one, that's a new population that we would then encourage and support those efforts. So, but make those comments, because it comes coming from you all, it carries a lot more weight than from me. I'm not going to say Clark County says, but if you actually say it, then it's more numbers to tick off and more voices besides just me.
Did they not include employment in any kind of goals?
I'm not remembering.
I don't see one, but there's a lot going on at the Department of Labor around that.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason. Part of the reason we haven't had a lot in education in the last years, 3 years, is because there's a lot of the other advocacy organizations working on education things that we've worked together on restraints and seclusion and some of those issues, but not actually had projects that the BD Council ran and funded. So I don't remember, honestly. But I think you're right. I think it's because there's other support for that.
Are you guys working with DRW and SALE?
Yeah. SALE is represented at all of our DEC meetings and is funded by us. And DRW is at every meeting. Yeah. We have council members from DRW. So, So I'm going to explore what happened for your submissions. You'll see that Walt and Ronnie's submissions went straight through. The rest of yours went to Mary, which she got to me, which I got to the staff. But for some reason, it didn't go through the website. I don't know. We'll figure out why that happened. It got there, roundabout. So the timeline, again, is extended for public comment until June 1. We'll adopt the first... The one that will submit to the feds in July 21st and 22nd meeting, our council meeting, is submitted to the feds by August 15th, no later than. So that's your window before June 1st, get the comments in, and we'll work on those between now and before that meeting in July, and hope we'll meet the final edits in July and approve that.
And people know what communities of practice are?
Do y'all know what communities of practice are? It depends on who you talk to on how it's understood. Go to the workshop tomorrow. It's very confusing, which is why as DD council members, we've been really focusing on pushing back a little bit on that language and talking a little bit more about leadership projects, leadership development, and community development assets. Community asset development rather than communities of practice, which seems to, it makes a little more sense, it's a little easier to understand, and it's a little easier to identify. What are we talking about when we're talking about community assets? So one of those community of practice projects, if that language may stay there, but it specifically is focused on asset development.
And there's a curriculum for that.
Yes.
Out of Northwestern.
Yes, yes. Yes, and we've been looking quite a lot of the work that Bruce Anderson's done and a number of others have done, and ACD. And it's one of my passions. As many of you know who heard me talk about that. So,
I still don't know, sorry, which five communities, local communities?
Page
5 and 6.
Those aren't selected yet.
So how will you select them?
There'll be proposals, the request for proposals will go out and communities can apply. Letters of interest, or?
What is a community in part of the city, or how big is a community?
You can, the county can, the city of Vancouver, the county can. So then the other, any more questions on the thing? It's a long, involved, confusing process we've been working on for months, but yeah.
Can we get this document in edible, because there's some language that we'll have to change the process?
Okay. Absolutely. This was last minute that I even had time to talk to you today, so I had paper copies, so I didn't even make paper, but I'll get it to Mary, and I didn't have any of the updated ones. I had an older version, and I didn't want to give you that because I'm sure. But I'll get the most latest and greatest edits should be to me on Friday. That's the to all of the DD council members this Friday.
This Friday.
2 weeks, yes, 2 weeks after our meeting. So we'll have the latest and greatest on Friday, which I'll then forward and Mary can forward out to you.
I'll send it all to the board. I don't know if everybody else wants it. Do you all want it? So send it
please,
to the mailing
please
list.
Please comment. It's good.
What kind of comments would you be looking for?
Whatever you want to say about what we're planning to spend our time and energy and resources on over the next 5 years.
Okay, so do you have some ideas on what you'd like proposing this?
Probably the easiest thing to do would be to go through that and make comments next to if you have questions or if there's concerns or, you know, I appreciated Walt's comment, you know, about closing the institutions. You know, anytime we can get that in there, that's good. It's not addressed in our state plan. We can't spend state plan money on that agenda, but we sure want to hear everyone.
I'd like to see more community inclusion for people that are in institutions brought out and brought into the community a little bit more.
Right there with you. And if we can develop those community assets, we'll be better able to do that. Because community capacity building is what we got to do. So that's why those community practice projects are focused on. So then the other thing, any more about the state plan? The September meeting, I advocated and lobbied for a September DD Council meeting over here in Vancouver. So the dates are September 22nd and 23rd. That's a Thursday and a Friday. We held at the Heathman Lodge. We have work group and committee meetings on Thursday morning. They're open to the public. The full council meeting Friday morning is open to the public. We will have, though, a town hall meeting that Thursday night, which is open to the community. And I'd love to see a huge show of support and people there. But I'd also like your input over the next couple of months about what you'd like to discuss. The DD Council will be there. You'll have 5:30 to 8:30 is what we've set aside, so there's a social hour and then meeting time.
That's
typically Thursday the 22nd of September. So typically what we do is have some discussion starters for and table talks and then time sharing out. And quite honestly, we haven't done a real good job of getting input from the community ahead of time about what they'd like to talk about. I'd like to do that this time and kind of set it as a new baseline for how we do these town hall meetings and really get information from the community about what they want. What they want to talk about, what they have questions about, what they want to know.
Can you send me something in writing that I can shoot out to people, and then Darla can get it to groups and Monica can get it to groups?
So if I can get it back before the July meeting, which is always the third Thursday and Friday of the month, is when we meet. And, so if I can get it back before the July meeting, then we can craft those, that town hall meeting and the content for that during that council meeting in July. So I'll include that. That gives you a couple months to kind of think about what are the hot issues, the hot topics in this community, what would you like to talk to the DD Council about? And, keeping in mind this state, that first draft of the state plan will be submitted, but there's revisions at year two and year four and year five, and you can say what you like about what you think needs to be included or changed or emphasized, what we need here. I think that's all I have.
Is this something that we can talk about in the work session?
So we'll talk about this in the work session.
I'll send it to you.
And boy, will we have a lot of stuff.
Good. It'll be held at the Heathman. Our meetings will be held at the Heathman, our work group committee meetings, but also that town hall. It'll all be at the Heathman.
Leanne is our previous board chair here. And we have a couple announcements from the board. First, we'd like to introduce Patrick Canfield. He's our newest board member. And can you say something by saying?
Let's see. I've been involved in self-advocacy for a little over 15 years. I helped do a little piece in legislation through the respectful language bill. I was a participant, a huge participant in that. And I think, you know, disability law and disability awareness, helping people to better understand, you know, that we have choices and that we're not broken, we can speak for ourselves. You know, it's a big thing to do with me. It's always been my passion as well. So it's nice to know that we have other people like that in the community that are just as passionate, that have that same ability. That's, you know, I'm very grateful for that because I can share with you, I've been in an institution and I know exactly what that's like. I've been through that, so I'm aware of the things that happen. You know, I don't tell a lot of people that, so that is just something I will share with you that I have been through. So I'm aware of what you're talking about when it comes to that.
Well, thank you, Patrick. We look forward to your firsthand contributions. The other thing, we have a special announcement today. It's Leanne's birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
job.
It's in September. Thank you.
Well, I hope all the county has a solid answer to that.
When in September?
On the grid.
Can we rewind the tape?
Is that what, can we do this?
No.
I turned 21 in September.
We did say happy unbirthday.
We just didn't want to mess it. Maybe you were thinking of mine.
Is it your birthday?
Okay. Does anybody have a birthday today?
Taking mud off the face, we go to the next one. We take the next item up, Veronica, Mark, you've been talking to us. With half a tree, I think, is this all yours, or is this?
For those that may not know Marty, Marty is the lead travel trainer at C-Trans. Her and Sean Cavanaugh, our travel training department, has been doing an excellent job the last few years, giving opportunities for folks to feel more comfortable riding public transit, maybe overcoming some anxieties, and at the same time being very sensitive to the needs of people with disabilities and seniors. She works with me, so that's where she gets the senior part. But I'm very proud to work with Veronica and Veronica.
And well, was it not a community group that helped make some recommendations about getting travel trainers?
As a matter of fact, the ADA task force that, Tricia, you were on.
Oh, that wasn't a self-promotion.
You're the one that came up with birthdays, right?
No. Wanted the community to know that it was a community effort.
Yeah, it was one of the recommendations of the 2009 ADA task force at C-Tran to provide travel training as a way to help people utilize not only C-VAN and the paratransit, but also fixed route. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, I think it's nice for people here and other groups to know that that it was because of the community involvement that this was an outcome of that, and that or partially because of that.
And we're very fortunate to get a professional like Veronica like that.
Well, thank you. I was well groomed through county contracts.
Yes.
And working in the field of disabilities. So, anyway, thank you. For those of you who don't know what travel training is, it is a instruction on how to use public transportation and an education on other transportation options in our area. It does not have it's very specific. It's like employment planning. It's very individualized to the person. We do an assessment. We do task analysis. A lot of the same things that we do, that I used to do in the employment world. So it just really depends on the person, on what their goal, what their outcome is, and what their needs are, on how we train the person to use public transportation. It's a free service. We do not charge for it. It can be done one-on-one, or it can also be done in groups. I had the opportunity to present to the directors of the employment agencies a few weeks ago in our, just kind of offering our services and partnering with them to help their customers while, you know, hopefully maybe while they're looking for employment, so when employment comes, the basics of using public transportation are already there, and then we can also come back in and do more specific bus training to specific places. It's not a one-time only service. We have people that come back quite a few times if they have a new place they want to go, a bus route changes, things like that. Coming up in September, there's going to be some major schedule and route changes. So we are starting to look at that and figure out, okay, how can we get the people that we were training before that we know are going to be affected by those changes? So we're going to be contacting them and setting up some training again, or offering the training again, as well as the new BRT, because that's going to look a lot different.
So we're offering schools, groups, organizations, training on those, not only after it happens, but hopefully before it happens, so that they're going to be prepared when it comes live.
How many are you?
I'm two now. I used to, last year I was one, so there are two of us. But we have more than just us. We actually do another train the trainer with different organizations. Some of the employment agencies have come in and done the training and received a travel trainer badge, as well as the school districts, mental health organizations, and then they're able to go out and do some training for us. So we no longer reach than just the two of us. I'm also going to talk about our volunteer program. We're trying to ramp up our volunteers as well. They go out and do some of the same things. They go out and give that support for people who already know the basics of riding the bus, but they might be nervous about a change. Or actually, they also work with new people who are just nervous about riding the bus, maybe have never done it before. So we're looking at getting and wanting some volunteers who can help out, maybe peer-to-peer. We're going to have opportunities to maybe be on a platform and be there to ask the questions from the general public when these new routes and this new system go live, as well as maybe on the bus and helping out beforehand to talk to groups and bring groups in and show them what the buses look like, show them how to use the kiosks, because they're going to be paying off board, which we've never had here before. It's going to run like very similar to the MAX,
yeah,
where you've got your kiosk there at the bus station, and you get your ticket, or you validate your ticket, and then you get on board. You don't go by the driver.
That's only on the Vine.
Yeah.
The other buses, all the other routes, are going to work the way they do.
Do you already have videos on how to do all this? People can demo videos, you know?
We have a couple of videos, but not on the Vine yet.
They have, suppose you need it up and running.
Yeah. We've got a couple of buses in the bus yard now, so we're going to start looking at doing those kinds of things. Do it as much before it goes live in into November?
In the supposedly November 27th.
That's one of the shortest days of the year.
That's nice.
The shortest, darkest, wettest.
It's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, so it gives people a chance to work off some of that holiday tripping. You know.
Some of the other things that we teach, besides the basics of, you know, how to board a bus, how to get to a bus stop, all that, we're trying to integrate more IT, showing how to use Google Maps. C-Tran is moving towards a real-time bus arrival application, so they're going to have an app that will tell you real-time when the bus is going to get there. There is a capability out there to see the schedule, but the real-time is really going to make a lot of difference. That means a lot more to people riding the bus. You can get a paper schedule, you can get the schedule other ways, but this is going to be the only way you can get real-time. So that's going to be a big help, especially like if you have someone who's maybe anxious, wondering where that bus is at. They're going to have that tool for them to help ease that anxiety.
When will that go up?
Oh, we don't have a hard and fast date on that. There's some things that need to be put into place before it can get to that point, but we're definitely working towards that.
So maybe after the Christmas celebrations, we have to work out that?
maybe. I would say within the next 18 months.
Would that apply to paratransit as well, or just the picture?
Paratransit wouldn't be needed in that fashion.
Well, they would help alleviate that plus or minus a half hour, wouldn't they?
No. No, that 30-minute pickup window is standardized. Another satisfied customer.
the other apps that we're looking at is the Watch Over Me. Does anyone know? Has anyone seen the Watch Over Me app? So that is kind of it's an app where the person has control over turning on and turning off when they can be watched. So say you have somebody who's getting on the bus, first time, mom and dad are nervous, they can put that app on their loved one's phone. The loved one can turn it on and say, they can let this specific person, mom and dad, guardian, whoever, watch them, give them permission to watch them through the GPS for so long. You have to set a timer to it. But it's just one more way of kind of making sure, okay, where is that person? And just puts one more safety aspect into learning to use public transportation. There's other apps.
I was going to ask you, do you have that in reverse, that there's a GPS on the bus, and then we get answers from Susan's that they can kind of see when the bus is going to get there?
So when you're looking at the real time, you will have that ability if you know what the stop number is. Some of the apps, and once the ability to get the real-time information out that an app can be made from, I mean, you can have multiple people making different apps for different reasons.
And would that also then apply to carrier?
No,
this is only fixed route.
Are there GPSs on the carrier? We could just buy those little dogs.
There's so many variables on paratransit. The reason why there's a 30-minute pickup window is you can't narrow down. Like, for example, coming into work today, I heard about a terrible accident that was up on Mill Plain and Divine, where it literally flows down that segment. That would then divert a paratransit vehicle, just like a fixed route vehicle, around that area. So it's difficult. What we're trying to do is increase the information for folks to use the fixed route bus system, which can be a lot easier if you have some of this additional information.
Aren't there like privacy considerations too? Don't paratransit go to people's homes to pick them up? So
that's correct.
If someone's got a GPS and they can tell where the bus is, they can tell where everybody lived along whatever route, this address and that address. So I would think that there's also privacy considerations with that versus with a fixed route.
Good point.
Is it that one?
See? So there, Sue.
But there is a 5-minute, doesn't C-Van call 5 minutes before they arrive?
There is. It's called Ride Reminder, and it will call 5 to 7 minutes prior to the bus arrival. I would say that it's probably about 85%, maybe 90% effective in the fact that the remaining portion that isn't is related to delays that can happen, or not so much glitches in the system, but the triggering of this message from the computer is based off of estimated time of arrival. If there's a cancellation prior to that, then the bus is actually ahead of schedule within that 30-minute window, and so as a consequence, doesn't make the phone call. So that's why we share with people, we're happy that the imminent arrival phone call is going to come your way, but don't only rely upon that. And Patrick, you know that as a C-Van passenger, that if you only rely upon that, then there's going to be times where the system will fail, like any other, computer system. But back to travel training.
Now that's actually a good lead-in, because things like that happen on fixed route. So part of travel training is not only making sure that the person understands how to use the system, understands how to read a schedule, things like that, but can use that information. It's one thing to know, okay, the bus is going to be here at 10 after, but what does that person know what happens, what to do if it doesn't show up at 10 after? So we kind of try to look at the whole picture and all the things that happen. We'll actually set up situations where they've missed their bus, they've missed their stop, and then say, okay, now what? Things like that. And again, with the IT, we're looking at, using the Photofy, Photostitch, and things like that. What was the other one?
of a soundboard to give them a person more tools and more information the way it works for them instead of what we have in the house right now. So again, just trying to individualize the support tools for them to make it easier for them to use public transportation. So any questions?
I want you to tell them how, tell the board and how you go about doing the training, some of the things that you do to individualize your service. Because sure. I think that they'd be interested in that.
Sure. Okay. So again, we always start off with a meeting and an assessment. We never just say, hey, meet me at a bus stop. So the person does a self-assessment. So we have them read through all the skills it takes to leave their house, to get to the bus stop, get on the bus, get off and get where they're going. So we ask them all these different questions, and then we based upon that, not strictly upon that, but it kind of gives us a start. We can make picture schedules for them, or we might make a sign for them to hold outside the bus. We did for one person that said, please lower the bus, because the person had a very, she could speak, but her voice was very faint. So the drivers were having a hard time hearing her. So when she holds that out, then the bus knows. And we went through more than one version of it. First they made it on an 8x10 on a piece of paper, but what we were finding out is it was going like this into the purse, and then it would be coming out looking like this. The driver couldn't see it. So then we did it on another thing, and again it got folded in half, and it wasn't being held where the driver could see it. Once we put it, we put it on something hard, something that she wore, that she just had to hold up, and it worked much better. So we, you know, sometimes we go through a few different versions, and hopefully all of, you know, what we look at is it's not something that's permanent, it's something that they use until they don't need it anymore. Example would be an individual who lives at the school for the blind but goes to school at the school for the deaf. And she did not want paratransit. She wanted to use the fixed route. And so there was working with the school, we made a sign for her. Again, it was the same size as her ID. It just simply said, I am deaf and blind. I need to get off at the stop in front of the school for the blind. And the other side said school for the deaf. They put Braille on it so she knew which side was which. And when I get to my stop, please tap this sign. So she sat there and she just simply held it. When they got to the stop, the bus driver would tap the sign. You know, it gave her the indication, okay, I need to get off the bus. She used it for about 3 months, and that was all she needed. Then she learned the physical characteristics of that route and that stop, and then she didn't need it anymore.
Oh, wow.
Did she have a dog? Did she have a service animal?
No.
Really?
No.
Wow.
And one of the other things that you mentioned at the director's meeting was that you look at the route prior to developing your supports.
Yes.
For like as the person might look at the route as well. So
right.
Depending
yeah.
on, you know, each time you're working with a different person, wherever they need to get to, you think about things as if
yeah.
you were that person and then develop those supports.
We call it scouting the route. So sometimes one bus stop might be closer, but it might not be the best path of travel for them. We had one gentleman who had a bus stop that was kind of outside of his house, but to get there was difficult. It wasn't accessible to his chair. So we found another path that was flatter. So going in and going out of his home, he didn't have to deal with a hill. And it was just a friendlier path of travel for him. But he didn't realize that one because he just saw the one right outside. So yeah, we do. We take that route before we go out with them, just to make sure it works for them. You know, a person who is, you know, has a guide dog is going to have different needs crossing that intersection at Bill Thane and 154, than maybe a person who has such a like lower vision. There's a big, I mean, it just looks different. And so we have to make that plan different and that route different. We have some folks that don't get off at that intersection. They'll go look at Fisher's Landing
and ride the bus around because it just makes more sense for them.
Now, see, what happens after the training and the confidence level of the customer grows, there's a gradual fading process that first includes not being right beside them in the bus to eventually actually following the bus to make sure they get off in the right stop, so that there's the building up of confidence and also an understanding without them knowing they're being observed. And you know, that's traditional travel training. It's something that's very labor intensive, but the benefit of it is, more than anything else, is the freedom. You know, the woman that she was talking about, the person she was talking about with the sign, can get around all over the place on fixed route. Whereas without that additional assistance and confidence building and encouragement, we would be transporting her in C-Van. The difference is the cost per passenger on fixed route is about $5 per passenger boarding as compared to $45 for C-Van. And so that in turn, by her doing that occasionally, actually saves enough money so that we can help someone else. And so that's the whole point. Get more freedom, more access by building up their skills. And Veronica and Sean are very good at building up those, that confidence level. The rapport that they can establish is very, very good. And I'm very proud that they have that skill. If I was doing it, I would say, come on, buck up. you know, I'm not doing it.
In employment, you know, we've worked with some people that it allowed them to vary their work schedule as needed. You know, you have someone who works in manufacturing, the machines go down. The thing that they do in manufacturing, they send you home early. Well, that person's still waiting for CVAN because they have that same time. You know, and typically, you know, that person that you go into work that next day, they're offering overtime to make up for that downtime. Well, that person can't accept the overtime because they still have that CVAN ride. So it was really impacting them negatively on both ends of their paycheck. And now this gentleman is able, when he gets off work early, he can go to GameStop, he can go do something else. He can go meet up with his friends and, you know, he can take that overtime that she likes.
And it's more flexible.
Can you fill this online?
We don't have it online, but there is an email in there that you can just email me the information.
Veronica got very high marks from my teen's son when she taught him how to ride the city bus home from school, and he was being an angst-filled teenager because he really was like, I think you met him at the Evergreen office, and he thought everybody in the whole world would know that a C-Tran travel trainer was coming to meet with him. And I'm like, no, there will not be a blinking sign. And when people see you with a grown woman, they're going to assume it's your mother. They think it's me. So
I had to promise him to not be in uniform. I got to wear jeans and tennis shoes to work. I was happy.
Very good. But yeah, that's training then. Very good. He made very hard work.
And just on the pragmatic side, you mentioned the costs, and am I right in understanding that the travel trainer program has paid for itself in what it's saved?
It's called cost avoidance, the cost avoidance that's recuperated by what Sean and Veronica does more than pays for their salary. It isn't hard figures, but it's the avoidance of that obligation. And yes, and that's the reason why the board of directors strongly supports it. The executive staff at C-Tran, you know, supports it too as well.
The example of the person who is going to work, you know, he typically took the bus to work 5 days a week. When you calculated that out, it was, you know, around $18,000 a year. So that first year, you know, we look at that cost avoidance for that one person of $18,000. Well, the next year you're looking at, there's that cost avoidance still carries over. It happens again. So it kind of built, you know, the nice thing about it is it just keeps
building. You know, it's not, even though we only do it per year, it actually does, some of it does carry over if they're still using the fixed draft system to the year after year after year. And then we're also finding that when one person knows how to use the fixed draft system, they're buddying up with somebody else to say, come with me. I can show you how to do it.
That's one thing that Veronica's done is created bus clubs that has been very helpful in assisting seniors, people 65 years and older, overcome some angst, but because they'll have other people of their peer group along with them, and they go to fun activities. They go to the zoo, they've gone to restaurants, they've gone to specialty grocery stores. I don't think they've ever gone to the pot shops, but
no, they haven't had that request.
But
going to Pal Books, that's about as close as we're getting to that.
That's probably about the equivalent, you know.
You know, we don't have to do new donuts either. They did mention that though on the Pal Books, that we would do donuts. And for them, you know, we just kind of look at, you know, what would make it interesting for them. And for the seniors, what we ended up creating was a passport. So every time they go, they get a stamp on their passport, and then they have like a potluck and stuff, and we do something for them at the end of the year. And they like to get their stamp in their passport. And we do this club as well for transition students. We send out a calendar to all of the teachers and staff who have come in to do the trainer program. We send them out the calendar for the bus club in the summertime. And then we get, you know, kids are still taking that bus and using those skills that they learned throughout the school year. So we're trying to keep those skills up during the summertime.
Now, one of the things we need, and this is where I put the touch on you, is the fact that we need travel ambassadors. Individuals that are willing to maybe volunteer a couple of hours a month to assist other people in guiding them doing the same thing, a peer group experience in learning how to use some of the routes, or with the upcoming Vine that's going to be passing nearby here. It's going to be very intensive change for folks. And so what I'm asking you to do is look deep inside your soul and to think about the folks that will be lost, I mean really lost, if they don't have you as a person coming alongside them, spending 2, 3, 10 hours a month helping them to learn how to use public transit. And I know you're caring individuals, that's why you're here. And in fact, I think you have a sign-up sheet right there. And if that doesn't work for you, Bill Bauman right over here is looking for volunteers for the One Call, One Click program too as well. Again, another way to express your humanity towards other people.
Well, when we get to the last agenda item and you talk about that again, can you add the One Call, One Click?
Sure.
Yeah.
Be more than.
I think it's important to.
Any questions? Are you done?
No, not yet. You touched on it a little bit. I was going to ask the educators here, but you can maybe answer first, is about the transitions program, because I know when my son went through it, I don't think there might have been a little bit of this as a part of it, but how much experience are these students getting and training are they getting before they leave the school?
You know, it kind of varies on, of course, the time that the teachers have. They don't get the luxury of the one-on-one that I get, but we do partner with the transition, and we have worked with one or two of their students on an individual basis once they got them to the point of fading, that we have gone in and pretend to be the stranger, to test on the stranger danger, or we've followed them, you know, to make sure they got where they needed to go. But yeah, we're more than willing to work with the students as well for whatever they need. We have taken groups, you know, their first outing out, we brought them to C-Tran for tours,
to kind of get the students excited about the buses. When they get to go through and look at the maintenance department especially, it gets them excited about the bus. They love to see the great big wrenches. They love to go through the bus wash. And it just kind of gets them excited about the bus, you know. Not riding the bus, but that aspect gets them excited about riding the bus.
I think that your passport thing is great, especially for transition students, even in the summer, because it's an impetus to use the bus and know that, you know, the, for parents to know that there's been training and they have us and then carry that over.
We had a residential program request one. And so the owner of the residential program is going to put prizes together for not only staff, but the residents as they fill their passport. So we went out to a residential program and did training for the staff there.
So it's kind of some incentive.
It was. And, you know, she insisted that the staff get out and get on a fixed route and not keep going on CBAM. Yes. So we want that. We want you out and about. You know, we want you to use that least restrictive environment of our fixed route system.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Darla.
Is my last legislative update for the year. So the governor signed the budget on April 18th, and what I'm passing around, it's two pages. The top page, and sorry, you got all my highlighted issues, but just to kind of go over some of the highlights, they did provide funding for the overtime issue for the individual providers. That has been the overtime issue, and the change to the provider one for the individual providers has been quite a cumbersome challenge. It has definitely kept our phones ringing at the Parent Coalition dealing with all of that. So there's some client protections put in there. We got planned respite at Yakima Valley. We did not get respite within the community, any additional respite within the community. So we got an increase to case managers to increase the number of visits that would be happening in a person's home to help with, try to provide, it's for the individuals that are more higher at risk for vulnerability issues. We got an increase in case managers for just natural caseload growth, and we got an increase in case managers for the community first choice, so that was good. What other? Oh, parent-to-parent was funded, so that was kind of good, except that they did this really strange thing in the budget, and instead of funding new programs, they only put funding in to enhance existing programs. So we're going to enhance Clark and Skamania's parent-to-parent program to reach into Klickitat County. So, it's like, okay. There's a little bit of money there to do that.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not sure why they worded it that way. I thought that was kind of strange, but we're going to do what we can.
Oh, locked out.
We did get funding for an ombudsman this year, which was good. We've been trying to do that for a long time, right? I mean, how long has it been? 5, 6, 10 years?
20.
We've been 20 years. We've been trying to get a DE ombudsman.
Maybe even aging ombudsperson started in about 1980.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably in the late 80s that developmental disabilities sort of thought about it.
Yeah.
But it was always, Janet was living in Clark County when it was
out. Well, we've
awesome.
Got it. Yay. Yeah. Now, what I don't know is what it's going to actually look like. And when I asked that question, they said they thought there would be like one main person at a state level, and then there would be like some outreach stuff that's done. So it's still nowhere near where we need it to be, but it's a start. The ABLE was passed. We did not get funding for our 911 service system that we wanted. I think the bill passed, but we didn't get the funding for it, so we're gonna have to work on that. So you guys can read all of that, and then there's the bills on the back, the next page over, that I've already gone through with you guys, and I don't think there's anything new or exciting there. Are there questions?
What's gonna happen next
year? Huh? What's gonna happen next year? Yeah.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be really bad next year. Yeah. It's going to be really, really bad next year. And McClary and mental health is going to take all of the funding, and I don't know, we will probably not get out of the legislative session. If we're out by June 30th next year, it'll be a miracle.
June 30th. They won't want to shut the government down.
No.
But I suppose anything can happen in a year.
Well, and government has shut down before. And
in Washington?
Well, not state, yeah. Federal. There are some rumblings, and this might be a good opportunity to let you know that October the 25th will be our candidates forum this year. It's going to be held at Clark College, and it will be an excellent opportunity for you to come and vet the new candidates or the incumbents that might be running again. And I will put together a list of their voting records if you would like to see it.
Yes.
That would be very good, yes.
So, okay.
And is that all candidates, Darla?
It's all candidates. We're even requesting representation from the presidential election, the OSPI elections, and then our state legislative stuff. Mm-hmm. And county, yeah. And we'll get some county, yes. So it's going to be a busy few hours. So it will be good. We'll see what happens. So anyway, and I'll put together voting records wherever I can get them. Any other questions?
Well, there's some concern about Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
Is she a senator?
She's a representative.
She's a representative, but Senator Parlett from the Wenatchee area is probably not going to run again, I guess, or she's retiring or something, and Walsh expects to take that seat. And she wants to...
She's running an interim session to focus on sheltered workshops and group-supported employment, because she really wants to try and keep group-supported employment and sheltered workshops open, and feels the DDA is not representing what the Center for Medicaid Services is saying on a federal level. And so there's going to be a lot of work done interim. There was a bill that she ran this year that didn't get through, but we think it probably... She's going to work really hard to get it through next year. Representative Walsh historically has been one of our champions. So this kind of puts us in a very odd situation. She also is a sibling of an individual who experiences developmental disabilities. But she's hearing from a lot of her constituents that have issues around this in Eastern Washington. And what we have found out is in Eastern Washington, things are not done the same across the state. And so, and the same information from the same bureaucratic systems don't happen equally across the state. And so, Eastern Washington has some very unique situations occurring, and all of this really is occurring about 17 individuals. And so we really need to figure out how do we get those 17 individuals jobs, and how do we help the families identify respite providers for the rest of their hours. So.
I think if we can get them respite and employment, the rest of life sorts out. You know, then you know who needs a residential program, because you kind of have a little better sense, or who wants to live in an apartment.
And what we're hearing is there's no respite providers available in Eastern Washington, and there's no employment available in Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
So I find that unique, but that is that is why Representative Walsh is holding this work group. So we need to work on that, definitely on a state level.
No job.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm United Workers for Families, and that they still have four Facebook and four children workshops.
Oh my goodness.
And they just finally put language to start looking at full hours. So they're not ready. I mean, that's Spokane, the second largest city in the state of Washington. So I understand that.
There's no jobs there.
No, there's not jobs there.
Yeah.
We don't have employment providers that are ready.
They don't
understand. And they have folks that, you know, have historically been very isolated.
Wow.
That's my hometown a little bit. It's a different
We're very liberal in our thoughts.
They really should have done the states differently, shouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. And what is the new CMS rules?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Oh, the CMS rules.
The rules about funding for CMS.
So the CMS rules I was referencing, I think they have
17.
Yeah, 2017, but is it December 2017 or something?
I don't remember exactly.
I don't remember the month.
They had to have their plan, they had to have a plan in the Fed by March of this year.
Last year.
And I think they, everything has to be changed by 2019.
Okay. And what my understanding of what the CMS rule says,
Is that in settings,
they need to be integrated.
Yeah.
So if you could have a sheltered workshop that's integrated and pays minimum wage or higher, you would be fine.
It has to have access to the community. It's tricky when you get the sheltered workshop.
I suppose that's what I meant when I said integrated,
right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's out in the community and pays minimum wage. Yeah.
And DOL has a new recommendation in the Senate. There's just a lot of federal stuff coming down.
Mm-hmm.
DOL. And then 14C, the minimum wage things, that's heating up.
That's also happening on the DOL side, okay.
Yeah.
A little bit. They haven't really come out and said, no, I mean, they're big players nationally, so they haven't taken their input, but they're starting to chip away because now it looks like to do sheltered work, you need those individual certificates. Never before did you need that. But now you go to the DOL website and you need individual certificates and you have to say why somebody's there and how long they're going to be there. And so as people are renewing their certificates, life is going to change.
And did the state ever get a system for individual
certificates? So they had their last meeting on Monday.
Okay.
And I don't know what all the process is, but what I remember from the Hartford conversation we had after that meeting was that a person will be assessed, and then based upon their lower assessment of their work output, which can be done without any accommodations to the individual, is what their pay will be based upon. And our question was, compared to what?
Yeah.
Right? And they couldn't really answer that. Right?
It's harder for non-prevailing wage classifications.
And they couldn't answer that question, and they couldn't tell us.
Labor and industries.
Well, no, I was talking to DRW.
Oh, DRW.
Who was reporting back out. They also was stating that, we're like, how can they do these assessments without providing the accommodations that an individual with a disability needs, right? And they also didn't have an answer to that. So although the meetings are done and the process will be rolling forward, I suspect there's still some huge issues with the process that we'll have to address.
Yeah, it's like a hot mess, and 17 families are essentially driving
the entire
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Darla. Yeah. Trish, you got an update from the agency?
I do have an agency update. So I wanted to make sure that the board was aware, as well as the community here, that the contract, one of our employment agencies, the contract with SL Start, is expiring at the end of June 30th. And we have communicated with our customers who are currently receiving services there, of which there are 28 customers in individual employment services and 11 customers in community connections with SL Start. We've also communicated with SL Start, the agency, and they have agreed to assist with the transition of those customers to new employment agencies. We've communicated with case management and guardians. So far, we've had two open houses, one on March 23rd and one on April 20th. And we had a number of individuals that came to those open houses and met with all of our employment agencies, which all of our employment agencies, all of the remaining employment agencies are currently open to accept new customers, which is not always the case. So they're kind of have their pick at this point.
How many agencies will there be after SL Start is gone?
After SL Start, we have 7 employment agencies. And the individuals can also choose to have their individual interviews, which is kind of the standard process that people can go through to select a new employment agency. And our partners at the Developmental Disabilities Administration, case managers, are working very diligently with their customers that they support to assist them to choose new providers as well, and letting us know. And so far we've seen some people move, not a lot. We anticipated that people would wait until towards the end, which is kind of what we're seeing. But I've noticed an uptick in the last week or so of people who are actually selecting new providers and moving to new employment agencies. Any questions about that? Okay. Mary wanted me to also mention that I think that we've talked to you about the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So this is the federal authorization of Division of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And recently, with that authorization or reauthorization of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, there's been some changes with regard to services for transition students, how the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation is connecting with local communities and school districts. And one of those pieces is that there is a workforce, the Southwest Washington Workforce Development Council plan is now up and available for input. So I'll be sending that out. So I just wanted to give you a heads up that that would be coming your way. And we have Helen Christensen here from DBR. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but do you have anything to add about that or anything else that you know about the workforce development part of WIOA?
Yeah, so DBR is rolling out a program called Pre-Employment Transition Services. These services are to provide to students that have 504 plan or IEP plan as early as 14 years old. And there are some different components of the service that we'll be providing to these kids. Career exploration, after school internship, advocacy, soft skills, a variety of things. But everything is kind of still in a developmental stage. They're also gonna reach out to school kids, but in a group setting, they don't have to be enrolled in DBR service, but that's still not materialized yet. They're still working on it.
So one of these pieces of the planning for this is this Southwest Washington Workforce Development Plan. So we'll send that out. You can take a look at it in your leisure. Well, give input.
Yeah, it's about 57 pages, but Don Kay suggested we get in touch with our local workforce development councils. And so we haven't read it yet. I haven't read it yet. But what I have read is maybe a little weaker on developmental disabilities, because I don't believe they're used to seeing folks. They usually go right to DBR, probably, rather than going into the WorkSource. Or maybe a job coach with the person at the
end. We do collaborate with WorkSource, and we have a liaison that works with WorkSource. But it seems like this path of the employment transition program is still kind of under development. We still haven't had the final words of everything that we're going to be doing locally. But we are going into school to do presentation to introduce this pre-employment transition service.
This passed in 2014, so how long after something like this passes is it before it's reauthorized again?
That I don't know, I'm sorry.
Well, I don't either, so I'm just throwing it out, Jenny. Okay.
All right, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, so we finished the special orders part of our agenda. Oh, sorry, Walt.
Okay. I'm going to be fairly brief, and can you...
Yeah, does the board have these?
The board doesn't have one of these.
Or one of these.
There's the packet that's the service change, and then also what I'm giving you, the very large piece is the is a handout that was given to the board of directors, CTRAN board of directors, at their retreat on the 16th of April, that was addressing the issue of the boundaries that CTRAN has and what services are available to individuals outside of the current CTRAN boundaries. That's this document right here. This is just a resource guide that you can look at to see what types of services are available. There's some more right here. Does everybody have plenty?
I think everybody's got it.
One of the things to keep in mind is that some of these programs, there is eligibility requirements. For example, Medicaid. The Medicaid transportation program is something that is limited to those individuals that are eligible under the Medicaid rules. This is just a resource for you. CTRAN service boundaries are the Vancouver urban growth boundaries that go around the northern part of Vancouver. They extend up to approximately 179th Street. It goes east to approximately 192nd. And then the boundaries of all of the cities, City of Vancouver, Camas, Washougal, Battleground, La Center, and Ridgefield. Ridgefield and La Center have some restrictions in the fact that the service to those areas is what we call connector. And a connector is a demand response or a point-to-point deviation service that has two runs in the morning and two runs in the evening and one in the midday to get people from the 99th Street Transit Center north to those communities, or from those communities to the 99th Street Transit Center where they can continue on the fixed route bus system. The other document is this one right here, the service proposals for the September 2016 service change, which will take place on September 4th this year. This document reviews all of the different changes that are going to be happening in our fixed route system this coming September. And this is the proposal that's been given to the board of directors. The public hearing took place in April. The board will either approve or modify this particular document at next week's board of directors meeting, which is on May the 10th at the library. And so one of the things that is a key component of this service change is trying to get more reliable service, more service that can ensure that it's easier to get from one system to another, from one route to another. And it also is eliminating a downtown route and changing it. And that's the number three route, which was probably the most controversial. And the fact that the number three route was really a lower productivity route, and it was replaced by the number six route, which is brand new, and the number 39 route was replacing, being replaced with a combination of the number five and the number six. Well, no, I'm sorry, I said five, I meant six. They took the proposal, which was five and six, and combined it into one called the number six Fruit Valley Grand Boulevard. The aspects about all of these particular routes is the gear up for the eventuality later this fall with the implementation of the Vine. And so what you're going to find, for example, with the Vine is it's going to be coming east and west, but it's going to have to make a turn going south on Fort Vancouver Way, going right past Clark College, then down to McLaughlin, and terminating and making a right-hand turn or a westbound turn on McLaughlin. What's going to happen as a result, the segment from Fort Vancouver Way on 4th Plain to Broadway is going to be eliminated. And that's the reason why the number six was implemented as a way to bridge that gap and also serve this particular facility, the VA campus. You know, it like any other service change, especially one of this magnitude, there's going to be trade-offs. The trade-offs that are going to be impacting people because of the change just in and of itself. And then also the impact that the frequency is going to have. We're truly trying to change the way that we're developing the system so that it's on more of a 30-minute frequency rather than some routes being on 45 minutes, other ones being on hour frequency. So it's a little bit more attractive for people to use public transit rather than their own cars or another form. One of the other major ones that will make Bill very happy is his advocacy of the number 19 route that was altered to be able to serve the Seymour Clinic up on Northeast 20th Avenue and the Kaiser that's up there in the Salmon Creek area. And what happened was we used to go up into the Washington State University and drop off in the circle that's right in the middle of campus. We're now going to go to the edge of that up Northeast 29th Avenue, and we'll be able to serve folks at WSU Vancouver, but there's a fully accessible level path that goes from that street, Northeast 29th Avenue, to the central part of campus that's less than a quarter of a mile. And so the thinking is by doing this, we're able to then service CMAR, which is low income medical services. We're also able to service Kaiser, that's right there. It's now one of their main service areas. And it'll also try to help service the Legacy and Vancouver Clinic medical facilities a little bit more frequently. I'm a paratransit guy, so I know this because I've been to these events, but I'm not as familiar as some of our other folks. In September, we're also going to split apart the number four route. Currently, the number four route starts at Vancouver Mall and goes west all the way to Delta Park. And part of the problem with having that single bus route going across the river is that when there's any type of bridge lift or congestion issues, it then has a domino effect on the fourth plane as a whole. And when the Vine is implemented in November, the Vine was not intended to go across the river. So we decided that what we'd do is get a head start and implement a single route, the number 60 route, that goes from downtown Vancouver, from downtown across the river and goes to Delta Park, the MAC station there, and then makes a run through Jansen Beach. The reason behind that is if something were to go south, like probably right now on the freeway, it's not going to have the domino effect on the rest of the service like it does currently. So that will be spread apart. That particular route also will be given free transfers for folks to go over so that they're not penalized because they're splitting it apart. Another innovative service, everybody knows that when the Vine comes online in November, that the transit center that's currently on the north side of Vancouver Mall will be relocated to the south side of Vancouver Mall, very close to where the big, huge sign that Cinetopia has. The Ring Road is being extended further south, and so that means that the Vine Station and all the connections at Vancouver Mall will be on the south side of the mall. Now, that's going to be a different situation. And for some of our customers, some of which Veronica has spent a lot of time working with, who live on the north side of Vancouver Mall, were very upset with the fact that they spent all this time and energy to learn how to use a fixed route system, and it's too far for them to walk from there to the south side of Vancouver Mall. So the number 73 route is a circular route that will be free, that is connected with the number 74 route that goes along Vancouver Mall Loop, the Ring Road as we call it. And that way a person will have a chance to pick up the bus there to take it to the south side of Vancouver Mall to then connect with the Vine or any of the other routes that come into Vancouver Mall. And so that's a unique feature that's going to start in September 2 as well.
Do you have a thing where the Vine's going to go?
The Vine is going to go up and down Fourth Plain Boulevard. Let me see if the Vine is. I doubt if this is in here because the Vine is bus rapid transit, but if you go to where it says Fourth Plain, it basically is going that same route.
Number four.
Yes, number four, Fourth Plain.
It goes on the same route as.
It goes on the same route.
Without the going across the river.
Exactly. Where it will turn on Fourth Plain is where you get to Fort Vancouver Way, and it goes south alongside between the VA to the west, Clark College on the east, down to McLaughlin, and then McLaughlin that makes a western turn, goes down McLaughlin down to Washington, goes down Washington to Turtle Place, which is 6th and Main, and then it goes up Broadway to do the return in reverse. This is all available online. I think that a lot of these changes, while at first may be kind of difficult for folks, we're expecting that Veronica and Sean will be very busy reorienting folks because of some of the changes. But overall, I think it's a plan that allows us to be a little bit more frequent in our services, go some of the areas that we have before. Yeah, Trish?
Have the new owners of the mall been any better to work with?
Yes.
There have been some question about having the transit center there before.
Right. That was lengthy negotiations with Westfield, and the new owner seems to be very supportive. The Ring Road change is something that is part of eminent domain. So it's kind of like, nah, you don't have a choice. The overall support has been very good.
Did they talk to Nordstrom again then?
The Nordstrom's ship has sailed, and into some kind of port in Milan, Italy.
How close is it
going
to go to Macron?
Well, the 37 goes right down Mill Plain.
Okay,
right, that's on. You know, I wish I could tell you better. What I would recommend is looking at, if you look at the number 39, it used to go right by MacFi, but the problem is that segment was very low productivity. So if you look at the number 39, you'll see that it short turns at Stapleton to then provide that service. One other thing that I would recommend that you give a try And I'm going to turn this over to Bill Bauman with the Human Services Council to talk about the One Call, One Click service. And that's a program that the Human Services Council, in conjunction with C-TRAN, has been working on. And he can give you an idea of what type of resources are available through the One Call, One Click Resource Center.
Could I ask a quick question?
Yes, please.
The transit center, when they move it to the south side of the mall, is it going to be part of the mall building?
No.
Or are they separate structures?
It'll be separate. It'll be close to the ring road, so there'll be a covered pathway between where the transit center is located and where the entrance to the mall is. So it won't be adjacent to it.
Well, I wasn't expecting to speak tonight, but I keep groceries in my car. So what the One Call, One Click Resource Center does is that it aims to be a one-stop shop for transportation resources within the five counties of Clark, Cowlitz, Dominion, Quinnipiac, and Mokaishum. So instead of spending a ton of time on Google trying to figure out what service is going to work for you, you come to our website and then they're already all listed there.
Yep.
So it makes it easy and nice. You want?
All right.
So the gist of it is that it has a trip planner built in. So if you're looking for directions within a transit district, it's going to pull up transit directions first. And if you're within 3/4 of a mile of a bus stop, it'll pull up transit directions. If you're not within that area, it's going to pull up just basic providers that operate within the county you're looking for. It definitely still has some bugs right now, because if you're trying to go from East Vancouver to West Vancouver, it's going to pull up Amtrak, because Amtrak has a station in Clark County, but obviously that's not going to work for you. So I've been working with the internet guy.
East West is better?
Because the way it works is that since Amtrak serves Clark County, since it's a station in Clark County, the way the computer looks at it is that it serves all of Clark County, so we'll pull it up as a relevant transportation provider.
So that's a prairie.
Which obviously isn't going to work, and we know this, and so the web guys working on how to figure it out to make it a sort of one-way trip. So if you're going from Clark to Cowlitz, Amtrak would then pull up for that trip, because that would be applicable. So it still has its little kinks, but we're aware of them and we're working on it. But the best thing about the website is that there's about 30 different transportation providers within it, and they all offer different services. So they're applicable to veterans, people on Medicaid, people with disabilities, and seniors, as well as low-income veterans and anyone else who needs transportation. So that's what this website aims to do, and it just is an educational and informational transportation website for Clark, Cowlitz, Quinnipiac, Dominion, and Packing counties.
Would this include someone who needs a ride to the hospital or to a medical clinic?
So one of the places I've been trying to reach out to is hospitals. So there's quite often times where people get rides to the hospital via an ambulance, and then they're there at 2 in the morning and they're trying to figure out how to get home. But I can't really call my family because they all are sleeping and have to work in the morning. So what options are available to me? I'm trying to get in contact with hospital outreach workers so they can educate their staff that this is a resource available, so maybe someone can. So what am I going to do? Well, here's a website that has transportation resources on it.
I'll give it to my husband. He works in Southwest ER. He does this all the time.
Please do.
I can put it in the break room.
Please do.
The nurses are waiting for rides home.
Give her a couple.
Give her a staff.
One of the things that Bill is the mobility manager for Clark County under a grant from C-TRAN called 5310. And part of what Bill has been doing also is trying to recruit volunteers to provide transportation. And so this is another opportunity that once you're done, for example, doing travel ambassador, and you kind of want to put a cherry on top of that sundae, and it could be on Sunday too, you could volunteer with the Bill. One of the things that the One Call, One Click Resource Center needs is volunteers to answer the phone, to provide that one-on-one reassurance and information about what resources are available. Because some people just aren't comfortable, pulling up things on the computer and doing it that way.
We currently have a good little CSAT employee doing that for about 20 hours a week, but he's in the mornings. So in the afternoon, if you call, you're not really going to talk to anyone unless I answer the phone and I happen to be next to it. But we have 20 hours out of the 40 hours.
You know, and that's a good point, because I know a lot of educators work in the morning and then are off in the afternoon. There would be a perfect marriage between educating in the morning and early afternoon and then informing and spreading information in the afternoon.
Yeah, you know, these are actually these can go to a lot of churches too.
Exactly.
All of those.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yep. Our church has a lot of these kind of things, is retired people and stuff.
Yeah.
Would you
We're
like
also
Bill
also
to come talk to you at church?
Does he have roles?
Well, my question is that, like, if you go online, one call, one click, how far amends?
That depends on who. So this website is solely informational and educational. You don't set up rides to this website.
Okay.
It just gives you a list of providers that you can get rides from. So some of the services on there, like Catholic Community Services, their volunteer services program, I believe needs 4 days in advance.
Okay.
I believe with our Medicaid program at HSC, you need 4 days in advance. But there's also private providers on there, such as Vantrans. I can't speak to that. For sure. They're a little bit more. I want to, but I haven't decided yet. But so they're there. The private vendors are going to be more expensive, but I doubt you'll have much of a wait time. And it's sort of trying to figure out what is the best for your unique situation.
And then you say point A to point B. It doesn't matter if you're going to the hospital, grocery shopping, or going to the job. Regardless.
It depends on what service you think fits best for you and then your arrangements with that service. But if, so like one of the services will cover only Clark County and it says only Clark County. So if you're trying to get a ride out to Skamania or Stevenson, then they're obviously not going to be the provider for you.
And then how much the person that's writing it is responsible for? And you talk about low income or?
That depends on the program. So some of the programs are like our employment to work program. So if you qualify for that, you get free transportation to work or work-related activities.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also private vendors. So if you need to work and go through them, you're paid money for it. It sort of depends on what is your situation.
It's a trip resource center. And then you can pick, after reading about what may be the qualifying or eligibility factors. Oh, that doesn't apply to me. Oh, this might. And then in turn, you could follow up as an individual or a family.
The reason I ask is that we do have people that wanted to go to work, but transportation is a big issue, especially when they have a job that starts at 6 o'clock in the morning and bus doesn't really work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have one of these homes?
Yeah, I do, and I'm going to put it in our lobby, and also tomorrow we have staff meeting, and I'm going to share it with my colleagues as
good.
Well.
Okay, but I have one up at my desk, so you can come as well also.
We're also looking for volunteer drivers. So if you like driving, you like volunteering. I recently met with people at Creekside Place, which is a living facility out in Battleground, and they have a van, but it's not used very often because it's the only two drivers are their activities director and then their facilities manager. And so if the activities person is driving, there's no activities. If the facilities person is driving, facilities are not getting taken care of. So we talked with them and asked, would it be appropriate to be used volunteer drivers to drive your van? And they ran to their higher ups and they came back and said yes. So if they fill out their application and meet the requirements for Creekside Place, we can have volunteers drive their vehicles as well.
Dang.
So I'm trying to maybe bring that model out to other living facilities and bring in cool volunteer drivers.
Anything else? Then the meeting's adjourned. Thank you all very, very much for waiting for the whole meeting.
If Bill is available right here, you can sign up with him. as you exit, Bill, I suggest getting close to the door.
This was for Wednesday, May 4th, 2016.